This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show's your connection to local music and more. This Saturday evening at the Canopy Club in Urbana, on the University of Illinois campus, as a matter of fact, the U of I a cappella group called Girls Next Door is going to be performing. The doors open at 6 o'clock, and we have three of their members bringing along their recent CD, or most recent CD, to talk about the group, the concert, and play some of their music. That's coming up in the second portion of the show, which will be within the first half hour. First portion of the show, we'll talk with conductor Michael Luxner, who is music director of the Millick and Decatur Symphony Orchestra, which is performing Gustav Mahler's huge Third Symphony this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center on the Millikan University campus in Decatur. Quite an undertaking, and we'll hear some of the music and some about the music and, of course, how an orchestra at a university goes about tackling such a work. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was a song of Gustav Mahler's from his collection, Songs of a Wayfarer, Ging heut morgen übers Feld, which begins in English, went this morning through the fields, dewdrops on the grass stems hung, heard the Mary Finch's song, Hey There, You, and ends, when I look up to the sky, I see her lovely blue eyes shine, O pain, O grief. And that's the sentiment, more or less, at the end. Love and grief were comrades ever, says the poet. And the music by Gustav Mahler. Again, the performance by baritone Håkan Hagagård and Kurt Mazur conducted the New York Philharmonic. This portion of the program on FM 90.9's Live and Local, I'm talking with Michael Luxner, who's music director of the Millick and Decatur Symphony Orchestra in Decatur at Millikan University. And they are doing, this Saturday evening at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center, the Third Symphony of Gustav Mahler, which strikes me as incredibly ambitious work. What made you decide to take on the Mahler Third?
I guess as Edmund Hillary said about Everest, because it's there. We've done since I've been at the Millick and Decatur Symphony since 1996. We have done four other Mahler symphonies, and it happened to be 1, 2, 4, and 5. And somehow the third, which I've never done before at all, let alone at Millikan, seemed to be calling our names. And it is, as you suggest, a huge undertaking and very ambitious for us, but it gives you that thrill that only comes when you feel like you're almost risking more than you have to lose. It's just, as you say, a tremendous undertaking, but so utterly, completely worth every shred of the effort.
When you do something like you just described, where you're sort of risking biting off more than you could potentially chew, what's the reaction of the students in particular?
Well, not just the students; it's the professionals and the faculty who play in the orchestra. You know, there's just something about when a Mahler symphony is on the stands or in the folder, just the whole just energy level ratchets up. People want their parts earlier. People practice earlier. People show up to rehearsal earlier. They're practicing more before we start and during the breaks. You hear it in the hallways. You hear it in master classes. It's a little like sometimes at a big music school when there's a big opera going on or something. You sort of feel like it's surrounding and permeating everything we do, and that's the way this Mahler feels. It's of course a tremendous a challenge and opportunity for our students to have the chance to play something of this scope and difficulty, as undergraduates, but it's not taken for granted at all by the professionals and the faculty. You know, we take care of ourselves, we make sure we get enough sleep, we make sure our major exams and our other classes are out of the way, and we treat this with the respect that it deserves.
What is there about Mahler that makes him so rewarding, just besides the monumentality of the whole thing?
You know, we think about this. I think in particular for orchestral players, there is something so satisfying about his mastery of the orchestra. And I don't just mean his mastery of orchestration. I mean, there are many composers who really know how to make a score sound well, but Mahler is a master not just of, you know, what instruments to use and when and in what combination, but he, as being the dominant conductor of his era, he understands everything there is to understand about the orchestra as a culture, as a body of people who work together. He will write music that may be difficult in one way, but not in others, but in some way or other always makes you feel important. No matter what part you're playing at any given second in a Mahler symphony, you know you're not just there just because you need to fill in a harmony, or you're not just there to play the bass line or to blend well with another instrument. There is just something about how his conception of music is so completely wound up with how an orchestra works, which he knew so well from the inside out, from being a conductor, of course, of the Vienna Opera and symphonies. And he challenges you every phrase that you play, no matter what instrument you're playing and no matter when. You can't hide, and just when it becomes almost too much to do, he has you do a little more, and then he gives you a rest and lets someone else do something. And there's just this complete sense of engagement, and that it matters, and that you're really adding up to something greater than the sum of its parts. And then, of course, we haven't even begun to talk about the incredible depth and vision and metaphysical content of his work. And that in itself is the kind of thing that you can go a decade in a major city and not have the chance to hear the Mahler Third, let alone in Decatur, Illinois, and let alone play it. So it's a big event.
Well, you really got at my next question, which was going to be regarding his sound world, by which I mean more of the emphasis on the world.
Yes.
That seems to be especially present in this piece.
Yes. Well, it covers the gamut, I guess you could say, of philosophical concerns. As usual with Mahler, you know, he is believed to have said a symphony must be like the world; it must incorporate everything. He's not one of these composers who puts a tidy little bow or a ribbon around his aesthetic message before he puts it in a nice little form and sends it out into the world like a Borodin symphony, say. Every philosophical rock is looked under. The implications of everything in the text that he's setting, he just gives it to all of us to chew on as we might, and lets us come to our own decisions. And I think that's, you know, for one reason why it took so long for people to really get a handle on Mahler. It's like a great book. You know how you really can't understand all the implications of Thomas Mann's Magic Mountain or Shakespeare's Hamlet or Proust's Remembrance of Things Past. But, you know, the first time you read through it, you just can't get your mind around everything. And the more often you go back, the more you discover. And with Mahler symphonies, you know, let's face it, for the first 50 years of their life, before recording technology gave people the chance to hear these things repeatedly, It would have been, you would have been dependent on a very rare performance to assimilate everything that's in it, and it might not have been a very good performance. So I think Mahler's time, as he predicted, it has finally come, because we have the chance to listen repeatedly and really, really digest and really get a sense of how much there is to offer there.
Well, what I'm going to do right now is play the very beginning of the piece.
Sure.
Just for a couple minutes. And then I'd like to hear from you what all that means just at the front. Why does he start with this thing? And then, after that, I'm going to play the very beginning of the last movement.
All right.
And how did he get there? So that was the very opening of Mahler's rather extensive Third Symphony. It probably runs about an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes, something like that in its totality. So I'm going to put Michael Luxner, who's the music director of the Millikan Decatur Symphony, who's playing the whole piece on Saturday, on the spot and say, why does he start with that and what does it all mean?
You could give a... I mean, what does it all mean?
Well, that, what is that?
Yeah. The conventional answer to the way it starts is, you know, that is the theme. And it's the theme in the sense that any symphony has a theme, or that any wonderful essay or novel has a theme. It's a statement of an idea which serves as the basis for, in this case, the first movement of the piece, which is in itself 35 minutes and the whole first half of the concert. It's a simple tune in a straight 4-4 with very basic rhythms, as a little bit like the chorale that starts the Brahms first, for instance, or the last movement of the Brahms first is what I mean. Some people say it's an Austrian marching song. He writes that it's to be played robustly and resolutely, but it's a happy thing as well. This entire first movement is, in this first movement, Mahler envisions, he called it Summer Marching in Pan Awakens, but it's symbolic not just of summer, the kind of summer that comes every year, but life bursting forth from lifelessness, all of life. And then, of course, the rest of the symphony picks up and expands on that by having a movement that tells us what the flowers tell him, and then what the animals tell him, and then what the night tells him, and what the angels tell him, and then what love tells him. But it all begins with this first movement as life itself coming out of inert nature. Nature not like even trees, but just mountains. And the gale force of that march, as it's developed in the middle of the piece, sweeps away all this lifelessness and creates the source for the whole rest of the piece.
I'm actually glad you referenced the mountains, because when that, it seems to me that once this music starts, you immediately have the sense that you'd better sit back. This is going to take a while.
Yeah, and how do you know that? But I guess you just do.
Before I play the bit from the last movement, just to sort of. And leave the obviously all the in between, well, everything's to be left to the imagination. But right before this last movement, there is a chorus,
yeah.
Children's and women's chorus,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
The forces at Millikan, I've actually talked in various contexts for choral music, are really considerable. Who are the choruses for that movement?
Well, for this before the in this piece, we have it calls only for women's chorus and children's chorus. They are representing the voices of angels, and there are bells. They imitate bell sounds, so it's very high in the register. The idea of this movement is that the preceding movement is the midnight song for alto solo from Nietzsche, which is very low and still, and it's about the night. And then the morning bells wake us up and give us the voices of children and angels in their purity and innocence. So we have one of Millikan's six traditional choirs. It's called the Millikan Women. It comprises mostly freshman women, directed by Beth Holmes, and the Millikan Concert Youth Chorale, which is a project of the prep department at Millikan, which is directed by Melissa Miller. And they'll be up in the balcony, where Mahler says they should be, with bells up there with them, so that you will literally feel moving from night to morning with the rise not only in pitch and in timbre, but in elevation. It will literally be coming from heaven. And everyone knows how marvelous the choral programs are at Millikan. Anyone who's been to, say, the Vespers program here knows that these groups really know how to make those balconies ring. So we're looking forward to that as well. But in the end, that one movement is only 4 minutes out of 100. So.
Yeah. Well, here's where he ends up. This is the opening movement of the last movement you indicated. Sometimes I think he's switched it. Sometimes he says what God tells me,
yes,
or what love tells
me.
Well,
actually, he dropped all titles in the
right.
end, but the last title he used is what love tells me, and in a letter he wrote, I feel like I could easily have said it's what God tells me. It's the sum of everything. It's the highest level of spiritual fulfillment.
And you can just combine the two.
Yes.
God,
yes,
love, and here you have it.
It's God. It's the idea of God in the most transcendent possible way, transcending any the definition by any doctrinaire religion.
So that's the beginning of the last movement of Mahler's Third Symphony. When you're conducting, when the orchestra is playing this thing, what kind of state do you find yourselves in?
That is a very good question. I mean, you have to be really careful about rehearsing this music. You can't over-rehearse it, and you can't under-rehearse it either, because it brings you, at its best, to a certain point of complete and utter artistic and spiritual balance and fulfillment and satisfaction that can't be deconstructed. You know what I mean? You have to choose exactly how much of it you're going to play, how much you feel you need to say, and at what point you're going to be saying too much, and you know, how much does it that needs to be said? I mean, you find this with program note writers too about this movement. You almost don't want to say anything about it. You just want to let it happen. So yes, it's let alone just the considerations of endurance. And if we're going to have to play this tomorrow night, should I play all of it tonight? At what point will I be stealing? You know, at what point will I take away from that edge that can come from doing this once, you know, when it really matters, and yet at the same time making sure that people are familiar with it enough to do it well? It's a very, very good question, and in fact, I'm finding the whole process of studying and rehearsing this piece, it's challenging in ways that I had thought I had learned decades ago as a conductor. I thought I could take any score and I would see where the problems are and know how to use my time and be on top of it and have no problem getting my mind around the whole thing and knowing what to do. And just the size of this, the scope, the breadth, the content, and the importance of this, I think, has all of us just feeling like I am so scared, but I am so lucky, and I think and to wrap the whole concept up of Mahler understanding the not just the sound of an orchestra but the culture of an orchestra, I think he understood that what makes a great performance by an orchestra includes not just mastery of the music, but the sense that we are really working to make this happen. Audiences feel that. Audiences get that. And it doesn't matter how good orchestras get 100 years after Mahler was writing, they will always demand the most from any orchestra. And the it's palpable to the audience, and they join us in scaling the mountain.
Well, audiences can scale the mountain with the Millikan and Decatur Symphony and its conductor, Michael Luxner, Saturday night at 7:30?
Yep.
At the Kirkland Fine Arts Center on the campus of Millikan University in Decatur.
We would love to have people from Central Illinois here to hear it. The box office phone number is 424-6318.
Thanks as always, Michael, and best of luck.
Yes, thank you.
All right.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah. So that's some of the fifth movement of a total of six of Mahler's Third Symphony, and the boy choir that Michael Luxner referred to earlier singing Bim Bam, which simply is the German rendition in this case of Ding Dong, referring to bells. Three angels were singing forth a sweet dulcet song, with all joyful harmony through heaven it rang. That's how the chorus begins. And again, you can hear the complete Third Symphony of Mahler on Saturday night at the not the Krannert Center in Urbana, but the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur. By the way, the excerpts I played were from a performance. Probably my own first exposure to this piece was the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, conducted by James Levine, with the Glen Ellen Children's Chorus, the women of the Chicago Symphony Chorus, and mezzo-soprano Marilyn Horn from back in the mid-70s. I can't believe it was that long ago. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our program is made possible in part by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. And on this next portion of the program, we have three members of The Girls Next Door, who are probably, well, I think definitely the longest lasting so far female a cappella group at the University of Illinois. And I turned up the wrong thing there. They're giving a performance on Saturday at the Canopy Club on the U of I campus on Goodwin Avenue in Urbana. And your doors open at 6. What time does the show start?
6:30.
That's 6:30 break. Well, quickly. So let you all introduce yourselves. Obviously, there's 13 of you and only three of you here. So the person just speaking was?
Hannah Newman, and I'm the president of the group.
Okay.
I'm Melissa Jones. I'm the business manager.
And my name's Emily Quitmeyer, and I'm the musical director.
Okay. Well, what do all those things mean, first off?
The president basically takes care of the four big shows of the year, and so that includes the show that's occurring on Saturday at the Canopy Club.
Takes care of, meaning?
Plans, organizes everything, recruits the band, basically everything that involves putting on the show.
And?
I'm the business manager, and that's pretty much advertising, trying to get shows, stuff like coming on this show, and pretty much advertising our little shows that make us money.
And I'm willing to bet that the day-to-day music person has more to do with the music director.
Yeah, definitely. I'm in charge of arranging some music and then just running rehearsals and teaching the music to everyone and making sure we're prepared for our shows.
The history of the Girls Next Door is kind of interesting because you usually if I remember right, you used to be part of the UI Women's Glee Club.
Right.
How long ago did the split take place, and do you know why? I assume it wasn't acrimonious.
95?
I think it was, yeah. I'm not 100% sure in the year. I mean, it was, it might have only been like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But the group's been around for...
Since 1971.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was even longer than that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the other guys that have been around.
They've been around a couple years.
They've been
longer.
Yeah, 2 years longer.
Oh,
than
that's
we
all?
Have. Yeah.
Oh, I just thought they almost followed the history of the Men's Glee Club, which would be really long time.
Yeah.
I think.
Right.
At least I think
so.
So
we used to be part of the Women's Glee Club.
Yeah.
But then, basically, in order to be like in other guys, in order to be in other guys, you also have to be part of Men's Glee Club. And we just didn't want to limit our participants to just Women's Glee Club members, because a lot of us have different majors and different interests on campus and don't have time for everything. So I think that's the main reason we separated from the university.
And what do you like about this kind of a cappella singing versus, say, singing in a church choir or singing in the Women's Glee Club? Do you, any of you sing in the Women's Glee Club?
One of us is in the Women's Glee Club, yes. But
or singing in one of the other kind of regular
we
choruses
have a few
on campus.
There's some of the other campus choirs.
Yeah, what appeals about this particular kind of environment, musical environment?
we're completely student-run, which really says something like about our group. We all have a job. We all have to work together to meet a common goal. It's not just a director and teaching the whole choir. It's not like a class. You all have to work together. You all have a major part in the group, because there's only 13 of us. If a few people are missing, it's hard to do shows and stuff like that. So I think it creates a really great bond between all of us, and it's a really fun team effort.
So as music director, you're not standing up there at rehearsals and waving your arms necessarily.
No, definitely not waving my arms. I'll make sure it runs smoothly, but a lot of times it's other people listening, other people giving ideas, or parts working together by themselves and then coming back together as a group.
So people taking on leadership roles just by virtue of what parts are singing and listening to each other. Hannah, you were about to...
I also think that it's really a really great opportunity on a college campus, because the types of music that we sing are very, very relevant for college students. So a lot of them are songs on the radio or are songs that college students are familiar with. And so I think that's definitely something that's obviously different from other choirs, and it makes it fun for the audience members as well.
Where some of the other choirs, it's more typical choral music.
Mm-hmm.
That was,
which is also
music
very
written
nice,
for that
but
purpose.
For college students, I think it's definitely a little more relevant.
Well, and that's where the ranging comes in, because Emily, get everybody's name straight here. Emily, you said you do some of the arranging. Are others in the group do arranging as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I do some arranging too, and about four other girls or so also do arranging.
A lot
so
of us arrange.
Most
songs.
Of our songs are either arranged by us or by former members.
So that means you're taking whatever is current, mm-hmm. or at least of current interest, to yourselves and presumably as representatives of the rest of the populace. And so it really is, I think you used the term, relevant in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody says I arrange these things, I get... That makes me scared, because people have asked me in the past as a conductor if I arrange music. And it's like, no, the whole thought frightens me and I wouldn't even know where to begin. So where do you begin? I mean, what's your musical background?
Well, I've been in choirs for many years and I've taken a decent amount of music theory. I've taken 2 music theory courses here, and I also took it in high school, so that definitely helps with arranging. Sometimes for popular songs, it helps to get sheet music to kind of guide you, at least like get you in the right key and help you with some of the rhythms, because sometimes rhythmic dictation especially can be difficult when there are like random instruments and weird things from very popular music. So that's probably where I start.
And then you write how many parts typically for this group, or does it vary with the song?
It's normally four main parts, but then within the parts sometimes we'll split on occasion.
And you identify the parts as in the usual female voice ranges, or do you?
Yeah,
do you like
we call it soprano 1, soprano 2, alto 1, alto 2.
So not like female barbershop quartets, which call themselves.
Have tenor and bass.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Tenor, yeah, with tenor, baritone, lead, tenor, lead. Bass, and baritone. Or, yeah, whichever the order is, right. Well, you're going to be, we're talking with three members of the Girls Next Door who are at the University of Illinois, and they're going to be performing a show Saturday night at 6:30 at the Canopy Club. You can get in at 6 o'clock. You know, I had never been to the Canopy Club until within the last 2 months, and I've been there three times now. And it's actually a great place to see various kinds of music. I had no idea. I even gave a show there. But the thing that I'm leading up to that I learned is that if you want a table or a decent seat, you really better walk in when the doors open. So if you didn't know that, as I did not, now you do. So beware. And also if you want to get any drinks and food and so on, if you're old enough to do that. You brought along a CD from which we're going to play a couple or few excerpts. How recently was this made, and how many of you are on this?
The CD was actually put out last year in May. How many of us are on it? Most of us actually are still on it since it's so current. We got...
So you didn't graduate too many people then?
No. We didn't actually have anyone graduate last year. We had a couple people leave for various conflicts, but a lot of us are still on the CD. The first song I think we're going to play is, it's called Long Way Around. It's by the Dixie Chicks.
And did any of you do this arrangement?
No, a former member did this arrangement.
Former member.
Yes.
Okay, it's the Girls Next Door here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
My friends from high school married their high school boyfriends, moved into houses in the same zip code where the parents live, but I could never find. Six strong hands on the steering wheel. I've been a long time.
Girls Next Door here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, and a song sung by the Dixie Chicks, and the name again was?
Long Way Around.
Long Way Around. You know, it's kind of interesting to me that usually when we think of pop songs, we always say it's by the group. Mm-hmm. And it may or may not have been written by the group. Was it written by members of the Dixie Chicks, do you know? Any idea?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
This thing sort of it's come up a lot on this show when people do, whether it's jazz standards, you know, somebody will do a song, Someone to Watch Over Me. I happen to know who wrote that, but you don't necessarily think, oh, I don't know. It's just a standard. It's just out there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that, I guess. What's happening on your show Saturday? Anything special?
Saturday's actually kind of different than our traditional shows. Each girl sings two songs with a live backing band, and then we sing a cappella throughout. So it's actually significantly different.
That sounds like it. Yeah. What kind of backing band?
It's just like a traditional full band. So it has keys, two guitars, bass, and drums. And then we sing backup vocals for each other.
Wow. So how did you practice for that? Because that's not your normal show.
No. I'm actually in another band, so in my basement we kind of have like a rehearsal space for bands, so we have all the instruments and a microphone and stuff set up down there. So everyone comes over this week before the show. The band starts practicing prior to this because they have to learn like 26 songs. But then we start joining them this week before the show, and we practice at my house with the band and learn our backups together and sing for each other, and then we sound check on Saturday. We get there pretty early on Saturday, a couple hours before the show, and run some stuff, and then go for it.
Have you done this kind of a show before at all?
We have, actually. We started doing this a couple years ago. We've had, this will be our fifth one, I believe. So we do one a semester now.
Wow. What made you decide to branch out in this way? Is that at all? So that's in your tenure that this is happening.
We had a former member who actually had done something sort of similar in her hometown, and so she wanted to expand it to our group, and then she left. She was only around for the first one, and then we just continued it because it was really successful. So,
but otherwise, your quote-unquote normal show is just 13 girls and your voices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Including in that recording, although it sounded like there was bass and drums, there's no bass and drums.
No, it starts off with natural vocal percussion, but then
did you sneak some stuff in?
We didn't sneak it.
It's still a voice. It's just
altered a little bit.
Yeah, engineered a little.
Yeah.
Okay, but bass is also like the alto line, but the person who made our CD just dropped it an octave down to get that more of a bass sound.
I've heard of that trick. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm trying to remember which of the... There was another a cappella group that was in here, and I think they said that they did that for
a lot of us record
bass.
With the same guy because he's one of the only ones around that knows how to record a cappella music. So.
And who is that? Somebody on campus?
His name's Scott Malinowski.
He's a studio. It's off campus, but he has a studio.
I wonder what the studio is. I'd be curious.
It's
well, it probably says on your
house.
CD. Oh, it's in his house.
Yeah.
Well, it probably still says in your CD or maybe not.
I'm not sure if it has his address, but I think it has his website.
It has his name
and
his name, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, we might give credit at the end. I think the next one we have, though, is pretty much you straight with maybe a little reverb, and that's
it.
Yeah,
a little reverb, but that's it.
So this is the Girls Next Door, Au Natural, let's say. And heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9 in advance of their show at the Canopy Club on Saturday at 6 o'clock in Urbana.
Because the world is round, it turns me on. Because the wind is high.
enigmatic ending. I don't remember if that was how the Beatles originally ended it or not. Do you remember? Because is the name of the song.
It's very similar. It's actually really similar to the version that they released on the Love album, because they took out any instruments at all that they used. So it was basically the same as that, with just voices.
Well, it's beautifully done by the Girls Next Door. We have three of their members with us on the show right now on Live and Local. Hannah Newman is the current president of the organization. Melissa Jones, the business manager. And Emily Quitmire is the music director. And those positions change annually, mm-hmm. or more or less?
Mm-hmm. We have elections every year, and so people run for whatever position they want and make their case for why they think they should be the position, and then we vote.
So you could run again if you want for
yes.
your own position. And that's when you find out if they thought you did a good job or not, if you want to run again. Well, I wish you luck on the show, and it sounds like a lot of fun to, you know, sort of get out of your regular comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Or does this feel like you're getting into a whole nother comfort zone?
I mean, we're kind of getting used to it, so I definitely think it's kind of part of Girls Next Door now, and it's definitely something that sets us apart from the other groups on campus that kind of makes us individualistic. But yeah, so I think it's starting to become more and more part of Girls Next Door.
And the Canopy Club is the annual location?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Canopy Club in Urbana. 6 o'clock, the doors open. Show starts at 6:30. And thank you very much for coming on, and best luck of the show. Oh, and I should mention that the group is going to be back here at WILL on WILL-TV next Monday night for a live show called Acapella Beatdown, featuring, I think there's 4 groups from the U of I, 2 from Central High School, and 2 from Millikan University, all competing for a wonderful trophy, which I have seen. It's just fabulous. And I get to be one of 3 judges offering commentary. But more to the point, callers and viewers who are calling with pledges or online can vote on who they think is the best. So anyway, mm-hmm. you guys have a leg up because you were already here on the show. All right, thanks very much.
Thank
and
you.
Have
Thank
a great
you.
Show on Saturday. Girls Next Door, and here they are in a tune called, that I think you recognize, Stormy Weather.
Do, 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 da, do, ha. Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather, stormy, since my men and I together, together, rain keeps raining all the time. Stormy weather.
The Girls Next Door from the University of Illinois performing Harold Arlen's classic Stormy Weather here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And again, you can hear them at 6 o'clock Saturday at Canopy Club in Urbana. Our program today is made possible with support from Sinfonia da Camera, presenting Rhapsody for Two on Saturday, March 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The program features works by Debussy, Chopin, and Schumann. More information is available at 333-6280. Coming up in just a couple minutes, I'll give you a weather forecast, and we'll have news headlines at 101 and at 106. Julie Amacher is in with classical music for you. On tomorrow's program, we will be privileged to have with us Mark Morris of the Mark Morris Dance Group, who are in residence this week at the University of Illinois with performances this weekend, Friday and Saturday, at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And we'll also talk with Scott Montgomery, Scott Ferguson, who is director of the Illinois Wesleyan University Collegiate Choir, who are performing on Saturday in Peoria to kick off, it's actually kind of a pre-tour concert at the Cathedral of St. Mary of the Immaculate Conception, Saturday night at 7:30. In Peoria, and we'll hear all about that on tomorrow's show as well, live and local from 12 to 1. Here are some other performances that you can go see and hear. Tonight at 7:30, violinist Stefan Milenkovic and pianist Rohan De Silva perform at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And Parkland College Theater is opening Father of the Bride, the play. That's at 7:30 at Parkland College in Champaign. And then they pick up again on Friday with performances through the weekend and next weekend as well. Charleston Alley Theater is holding auditions tonight from 7 to 9. They're looking for some additional actors for a play called Betty's Summer Vacation. That's in Charleston at the theater. The University of Illinois Harp Quartet is giving a free short concert tomorrow at 12:20 at the Beckman Institute on the campus of University of Illinois in Urbana. Samuel Foster, classical guitarist, is playing the Krannert Uncorked show tomorrow evening at 5:30 in the lobby of the Krannert Center. This is a program of Indian classical dance called Experience the Essence in the Music Building Auditorium on the U of I campus in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30. Vox Shambana, a new Renaissance vocal octet, performs at the Episcopal Chapel of St. John the Divine in Champaign Thursday evening. That's tomorrow evening at 7:30. Romeo and Juliet, presented jointly by the Acting Company and the Guthrie Theater at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield, Friday night at 8 o'clock. And Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra is performing a program called Immortal Classics Friday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center. And the musical Fiddler on the Roof is being put on by the Eastern Illinois University Theater Department at the Dowden of Fine Arts Center in Charleston Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock, and I believe there's a Sunday matinee as well. Those are just some of the many activities. Yes, that's a 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday of Fiddler on the Roof. Those are just some of the many things you can go out and participate in, and that's the point of this show, is to encourage you to go out and hear live and local music and see live and local theater and dance and much more. This afternoon will be partly sunny with a high temperature of 38. Tonight, partly cloudy, the low 22. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 43. Friday, sunny with a high of 46. This is WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana. Operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. We are the listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois.
In the same zip code where the parents live, but I.